Lions fans. It's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions Podcast. Your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. And now, the guys people are talking about when they discuss monkeys and footballs. Chris and Case.
Hey, howdy ho, Lions fans. Welcome to the Detroit Lions Podcast, episode 51. This is the official Detroit Lions Podcast for Reddit. I'm your charming host, Chris, and with me is my good friend and co-host, Case. How you doing, man?
I'm squeezing into my short shorts and fluffing up my pom-poms.
Okay. Today's show, we're going to break down what's been going on in the Detroit Lions subreddit lately, as we usually do. And also, we are joined by one of the show's favorite Detroit Lions players, running back Zach Zenner. He was very kind to spend some time with us answering our questions during minicamp on Wednesday. And we got a great interview to share with you guys, so stay with us. Also, we're having a Zach Zenner celebration at DetroitLionsPodcast.com. We've got a couple articles about Zach that are coming out. And also, our man Sandman has put together an awesome highlights reel of Zach and his great work last year. So check it out, DetroitLionsPodcast.com. It's a Zigzag Zenner celebration. We got a great show lined up this time, guys. Case, are you ready to go, man?
2, 4, 6, 8. Get that touchdown, Golden Tate. I was born for it.
Let's kick this off and break it down.
All right, make sure you check us out on Patreon. Give us a hand if you can. Been working our way towards some upgrades to our equipment, some good stuff to keep the show going, as well as, you know, helping to pay for some of the bandwidth costs and some of the other stuff we're doing. I'd like to give a special thanks to Dylan, who is supporting us from Guam, Mike A., Mike K., brand new helper, Matt, Eric, Travis, Lucas, Joel, Bert, Nick, and of course, Mathis. Thank you guys so much for helping us out. Even a dollar a month helps get us to the goal to help get all this stuff paid for and make this at least a break-even proposition. One of the things we do for our Patreon guys is we've given them the opportunity on today's interview with Zach Zenner. They were able to submit questions, kind of like an AMA, and get their questions asked of Zach. So make sure to join us on Patreon. Use that to your advantage, and you can submit questions every time we have a player on, and Zach is certainly not going to be the last. Be sure to check us out on Twitter. Give us a follow at DET Lions Podcast. That's at DET Lions Podcast. It's the best way to see Case naked, unless you follow him on Twitter, and you'll just see him in his underwear. Make sure to rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you find the podcast. Let people know what you think. That feedback is super important, lets other people know what the podcast is like, and helps us get to their front page. Also, before you go to Amazon.com, check out our website, DetroitLionsPodcast.com. And turn off your ad blocker. On the right-hand side, there's a little ad to Amazon. Use that as your portal to get into Amazon. We'll get a little kickback from every purchase you make, and you will get an opportunity possibly to save some money. Helps support the show, and it's by doing something that you were going to do anyway. For you students, if you go to our sponsors page, click on the Amazon link there, sign up with your .edu email address, you'll get 6 months of free Amazon Prime. That entitles you to free 2-day shipping, Amazon streaming service, all of the benefits that come with that, including the really sweet cloud drive that allows you to save your photos so they don't ever go away. Lastly, you can leave us a voice message via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast. That's all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast. Or give us a ring on the Lions line, 929-33-LIONS. That's 929-335-4667. Give us a call, leave us a voice message, and you might be able to hear yourself on the show.
Tighten your chin straps, kids. It's time to review this week in Reddit.
All right, it's time to talk about all the fun and exciting things that have gone down in Reddit over the course of the last 2 weeks since our last show, and we're going to start off with a hot take from Case about Theo Riddick. What do you got for us, man?
All right, well, as I've already seen evidence of a couple times, both in the Lions sub and on RNFL, not everyone's going to like what I have to say. There's a post on the sub right now by Logan's Knee. It's a PFF thing running back, Theo Riddick, forced a league-high 36 missed tackles on receptions last season. It's one of those things that I actually appreciate PFF doing, those kind of advanced statistics, things like missed tackles, you know, passer rating against, things like that. It's not their grades, which I know I've kind of shit on them for pretty hard, and will continue to do so. But back to Theo Riddick, I don't want to be misunderstood. I love that we have him on the team. I think he's a really good player. I think maybe as a fan base, we've overrated him and maybe mistook his production for his value.
What?
Wow. Like I say, I know that's going to make a lot of people angry. There are some there, and I didn't believe this myself until I had these things pointed out to me, and it took me a while to come around to them. But now that I've, you know, really looked at them, my mind has been changed to a significant enough degree that I'm willing to, you know, come out and say it. I hope that his snap count goes down in 2016, not up.
Holy
the way I've
Christ,
seen, you know, a lot of people. The stipulation that is, if he got better at running the ball, then I would completely change my answer on that. Like, if he got better at running the ball, like, on the ground, then never mind, forget I said anything. But assuming he doesn't, there's a big problem with having him on the field.
Let me just make sure I know what you're saying here, Casey.
Oh, go ahead.
Let me just make sure I know what you're saying. So you're saying if he can take a handoff and run the ball better, you're good with it. You're not having a problem with him catching the ball and achieving yards after the catch. It's strictly about taking the ball
fantastic.
In the backfield and going with it.
Yes. Here's the issue. When he's on the field, opposing teams know that, like, Cooter did a much better job with this than Lombardi did of trying to run the ball with him, but he was still really bad at running the ball, so it, like, almost didn't matter. But when he's on the field, opposing teams can almost certainly, you know, plan for the pass, which means that it's easier for them to key off on pass rush, and it's easier for their linebackers to keep their eyes on the receivers they need to, the tight ends, you know, whatever that they need to. It's easier for the safeties, who don't have to keep as close an eye on the line of scrimmage, because he hasn't been effective running the ball and hasn't been used a lot running the ball. And that means that it creates more sacks on Matthew Stafford. It creates more difficult situations for the receivers to get open, which also, you know, causes more problems for Matthew Stafford. It means that he has an over-reliance on his safety valve, which is Theo Riddick in those situations, which is why Theo Riddick's production was so high, because all Stafford had, like, in those situations so many times was the safety valve, because nothing else could get open, because the defenders were doing a much better job. Now, Theo Riddick made some great plays, some fantastic plays, and I hope that they still are able to use him in the pass game. You know, like, that's important. He is an important cog. But if he's being used so heavily in the pass game, it means that we're relying overly heavily on a safety valve situation, and we're not getting passes out in better to intermediate and deep routes. And while he can make occasional great plays, he himself gets put in difficult situation by being, you know, catching the pass, you know, 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And so, like, and so some of his yak is accounting for him just getting back up to the line of scrimmage. And he does a great job at it, but it's not the way you want to. You want to have a balanced offense that doesn't rely so heavily on a safety valve, because then it means that you're moving the ball better on the ground, which is opening up better opportunities for your receivers on plays where defenses are uncertain of whether you're going to pass or throw the ball. Now, there was one person who was emphatically trying to tell me that, you know, NFL defenses already know whether you're running a pass or a run, and I just simply don't agree with that. I mean, if that were true, things like play action and draw plays and QB designed runs wouldn't work. NFL defenses bet on the odds. right? Like if you're in second and nine, and that looks like it's typically going to be a pass situation, and Theo Riddick is on the field, it's going to be a pass situation. Whereas if we were in a situation two and nine where Amir Abdullah is on the field, it could be either. So, well, I mean, that's what I'm getting at with being able to diversify your offense, being able to fool the defense better, just make it so that things aren't so obvious.
So I'm going to say, okay, I think via formations, you could fool the defense, do a split back with Abdullah and Riddick. Gives you an option if you want. Riddick can roll out into the slot. He could stay. He could be in a pass route. You could hand off to Abdullah. It gives you more options.
So
you can work it via formation.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
But your key point really is for Theo Riddick to really prove his value and to maximize his opportunity for the team for production is really that he's going to have to take the ball in the backfield and he's going to have to be able to run between the tackles or around the outside and get yardage strictly on a straight up run play without a dump off. I think I can go with that. I can agree. I think that, like I said, you can use formations to play with that a little bit, whether you move them into the slot or keep them back there in a split formation or some of the other creative stuff that they've been known to do and we've seen Cooter do already. I agree. But you want, that's a complete back. That's the complete player. And you pay complete players a lot of money. And we do have Theo Riddick for a song, basically, right now. So I think he's performing at the number of dollars that we pay him and helps us stay where we are in the salary cap. So I don't mind it. I would love to see him break out this year. I would love to see him get a lot of the pure on the ground yards as well. But I think there's other ways to make that happen. I think Theo's got the best dead leg in the NFL, and keeping him, if he doesn't get that production that you're talking about, I think we get him for a lower salary than we otherwise would have if he had that breakout year that you're talking about this year.
I think he would be more likely to stick around
So there's an upside.
I think he'd be more likely to stick around if his production dips a little.
Right. So if we can scheme around him and keep him at the lower price, I'm happy, because I think if he needs more than $3 million a year after this year, we're going to see him walk. I think Theo is going to be playing somewhere else next year, because I think Bob Quinn's going to take a little bit of that New England approach and low value his running back position. Speaking of valuing players low, let's talk a little bit about Steven Tulloch. And I don't want to say that I value him low, because I really appreciate what he did. His injury, it just really threw everything into the grinder, didn't it? I mean, gosh, doing the knee on a celebration like that. And then last year he was just epically slow. But I'm of the opinion you just have to let this guy go. I have no idea why we paid him the money when the league year turned over. I have no idea why he's still on the roster. And it's not helping, obviously, that nobody on the team is talking about it. And they won't talk about it. I'm not sure. And I've heard a lot of speculation about injuries or something else, but it doesn't seem like that's at play here. It's a really, really weird move by the GM and the front office of how they're treating him. And I don't understand. It seems like a little bit of a lack of, well, they're not treating him with the respect that I think he deserves as a player, and not giving him the opportunity to find another team to play for. It's disconcerting, I guess, is where I'm sitting. How about you, Case?
Well, I partially agree with that, although I would be very hesitant to make any assumption right now as to what exactly is going on. Another theory that I don't remember if I came up with it or if somebody else did and I saw it and I'm just stealing it, which is probably more likely, is that it's possible that, you know, he's contemplating retiring versus taking the pay cut that the Lions offered, and he had to weigh that and simultaneously was trying to find out if any other teams were interested in him. And so the team, it's within the realm of possibility, frankly, that the team offered him, you know, a lower price. He refused to take it right away, and they were kind enough to let him stay on while he tried to figure out whether or not he'd take that or if he'd go somewhere else. So, like, I don't know. It is weird. There's no getting around the fact that it's weird. It's beyond weird.
We just got done.
I just hope one day we find out what the hell happened.
I think we will. But I mean, we just got done talking about how Quinn isn't going to pay a running back to stick around, even, you know, if he's done well. He's just not going to pay a price like that for the running back. I can't see that right after that conversation, he's suddenly nice and going to hold on to Steven Tulloch, especially if he's not talking about it. There's something here.
Right.
There's something weird. And Tulloch earlier in the season, I think it was around February, he tweeted a, hey, goodbye, I'm getting cut tweet out there. And it was pretty clear that it wasn't necessarily his choice. So there is something weird. And I can't wait to hear what the situation was, because this is about one of the strangest things that I've seen a team do with a player. Because I mean, they took a hit. I know there's salary cap space this year, but boy, did they take a hit on that. Not a huge one, but a hit nonetheless for what appears to be nothing. No reason at all.
A hit nonetheless.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll have to keep an eye on that, see where that goes. As soon as we hear something, guys, we'll let you know.
It's one more reason, and I've talked about this. I talked about this especially through free agency and through the draft, where like we're still definitely trying to figure out Bob Quinn. Like, we don't understand Bob Quinn yet. Right. I don't know that we'll ever understand Bob Quinn the way we understood Martin Mayhew. And as long as he's successful, that's fine. But these kind of things are so, like, I don't get it. So,
well, the thing is, if I kind of feel like if I understand what my GM's thinking and what he's doing, then he's too predictable and he's not that smart. So I'm going to hang my hat on that and give Quinn the benefit of the doubt right now. And hopefully he's going to be making the right decision and he's doing the right thing. But it certainly doesn't feel like they're necessarily doing the right thing by Steven Tulloch. But time will tell.
Yeah, for sure. So probably the hottest topic on the sub and elsewhere right now is the cheerleader situation. Woo woo.
Boom dragon.
Rah rah.
I have to give you credit for that cheerleading tryout you did at the beginning of the show. I mean, you have a real shot at this. I'll send you some gas money and I'll support you.
Did I make the team, Chris?
If it was my team, yes, for sure. Maybe we could take up a collection to send you to Detroit for the tryouts. It'd be fine. I'd love to see you out there.
So there were some quotes that came out today. Chad Patrick posted up in the sub. The title of the post is Lions head coach Jim Caldwell minicamp day one quote sheet, but isn't just Jim Caldwell, is also Rod Wood. And he's talking about the decision and gets at least into some detail and talks about how Martha Ford and the children were involved in the discussion. It was a discussion that was largely based on, well, income, but also on fan surveys that were done. And he also takes a little time to talk about how they are working on improving their Wi-Fi at the stadium, for those who that matters to. And he didn't want to talk too much about how Martha felt about the situation. But he did say that essentially he was pushing for it. There was a little added snippet in here about, whether or not it would be a co-ed team. And he said, we haven't made a final decision on that, but not this year. That the Ravens are the only team in the league that have a co-ed team. He did say, and we'll get into this a little bit later, that they will be part-time employees. So that's where that stands. So he expects them, you know, to kind of be a face of the franchise out in the city and whatnot. So community building, team building, face of the franchise type stuff.
Yeah, you know, we started talking about this, and where we landed right up front was, as far as the cheerleaders are concerned, neither Case nor I care, really. I mean, yeah, whatever. But, you know, there is some controversy, and there's a lot of comments in the subreddit about this. A lot of stuff has been stirred up. So even though we don't think it's a big deal, we said maybe we'll take an opportunity to take opposite sides and kind of discuss the topic from both sides and just see where we end up. So this is kind of a Curb Your Enthusiasm, kind of real bare bones outline we're going to be working from here. We're just going to talk through it. So bear with us on this. So the side that I'm going to take is I'm going to be pro cheerleaders. And Case will take the opposing side, being anti-cheerleader. So, you know, one of the things that culturally with football throughout its history, there's been cheerleaders that are part of it. And you can think back to your time in high school with the cheerleaders and the football team and all that. It's very traditional. It's very kind of, you know, they go together, yin and yang kind of a thing. And I don't think it detracts at all from the game on the field. As a matter of fact, the second there's any kind of action on the field, even if it's some kind of player substitutions in the, you know, on third down, I forget about the cheerleaders altogether, and I'm watching the game, and I'm watching who's on the field, and I'm studying what's happening and trying to predict what they're going to do next, and hoping for a Lions touchdown, of course. But in between, you know, those TV timeouts and halftime and at different times throughout the game, there's a place for that. I think it's fine. I think they add to the entertainment. They create this kind of full package effect around the game that's more than just, you know, guys busting heads against each other on a big patch of grass. So I don't think it's bad. The NFL is big on kind of the whole package kind of showmanship thing. And I think cheerleaders are a part of that. And I think they're part of the experience. I don't care if they're co-ed or, you know, female or whatever, as far as cheerleaders go. I think it's just part of the experience, and it all kind of goes fine together. I don't think there's anything really negative about it. Some people think, you know, they're much more progressive in thinking that cheerleaders are a bad thing and they shouldn't be there. But I certainly disagree. I think that, you know, everybody, there's nobody forced to do this, especially in a role like this. So it's a move made by choice by the people that take part.
Okay. And I, you know, it's tough to disagree completely.
No,
with
yell
that.
At me. Pound your fist.
But here we go. Okay. So there is some level of maybe like, it's maybe a little sleazy and behind the times. Maybe. To you know, it's pretty blatant objectification. And you, like you said, you know, nobody's forced to be there. Where that becomes a real issue is with where we've seen teams like the Raiders and the Bills, and we don't actually know how many other teams may have been taking advantage of the cheerleaders and really just treating them terribly, because they didn't really have a voice, they didn't have any power, they were expected to do all these crazy things to, you know, maintain, and they've given up a lot of other things they could be doing with their time to try to do this thing because they're promised a beneficial career, basically a resume builder, whatever, and then they're really just kind of shat on by the organizations. And I'm not saying that will happen here. I'm definitely not saying that will happen here. In fact, I would say that's unlikely. But if that were to happen, that would be, you know, that would be a problem, a major problem for me with the situation. And that's regardless. That doesn't even necessarily. I mean, oftentimes that can happen, you know, with if you've got, you know, a group of young females, and I don't want to get too far down that track. But it could happen either way. It could happen if it was both male and female. They could still be, you know, taken advantage of and crapped on and whatever. And I don't think, you know, to me that is not a good look. That was not a good look for the Raiders. It was not a good look for the Bills. And that would be a major disappointment to me to see them, you know, really not paying them what they deserve for a pretty, like, for what they do, which is a high talent, you know, thing. And to be out in front of that many people and to be that level of, you know, entertainment, they deserve more than what, you know, they were getting in those places. And how much they'll get, I don't know. Hopefully part-time means they still have time for other regular jobs, and that they, you know, that it would be great if the team, you know, was able to, help them out in terms of finding other, I don't know. That all gets really complicated and convoluted. Like they don't have to be there, you know, permanent, but being a cheerleader, you know, the expectations of you being at a certain place at a certain time for a certain amount of time, and then not getting sufficiently paid for it. Like, that's tough for me. So,
all right. Well, I can go with that. Now I got a couple of kind of counterpoints here. One, first off, you know, the lawsuits go where the money is. I don't care if you're a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar sports organization or a guy who used to work on the line and you won the lottery. Lawsuits are going to find you, no matter who you are, because that's where the money is and that's where they go. So I think some of this is kind of attuned to finding a way to separate some of the large money from the organizations. Number two, you know, I don't want to call it exploitation of workers. Some people would. I'm not going to be real rhetorical in my language here, but there's all kinds of jobs. People get a 40-hour-a-week salary. They fly out on Sundays and they fly back on Saturdays and basically have Saturday night at home and then leave, right? Is that exploitation of a salaried worker? No, probably. But the difference is, or the where they're similar, is they agreed to a salary to do that job. And these cheerleaders are agreeing to a salary. If they start asking for things that are out of bounds for the cheerleaders, then they have every right to say, no, thank you, I'm going to leave and move on. I have to imagine that not a single one of these women come in to do their job as a cheerleader and think that either at 50 years old, they're still going to be on the sidelines as a cheerleader, or there's another job beyond cheerleader that this is a stepping stone toward, right? Maybe there's model or actress or that kind of thing, but it doesn't matter where you are.
Right. You're going, well, there's all kinds of PR type thing that could, you know, but.
Right. And then, so they've made a choice, a lifestyle choice and a lifestyle job. Was the pay they got worth it? Well, that's solely up to them. Some people would never leave their family. Spend the time away from their family or work a job that flies them out Sunday and flies them home on Saturday. Some people would. Some people need to because it's a money situation, right? But that's a personal choice based on your values and your needs at the time. And I think it's the same for the cheerleaders. They choose to work there. Nobody forces them. If, you know, somebody told me to do something that was out of bounds for me at my job, I'd say, you know, screw you. And particularly if it's a low-paying job, it's a lot easier to walk away from a low-paying job. Now, I don't think that that's going to happen with this organization, because the reason we didn't have cheerleaders for so long, as it was told by many people, was that Martha didn't want them. And now, you know, William Clay is gone. Martha's running the show and somebody's convinced her to have cheerleaders. I think if they've convinced Martha that cheerleaders are a viable part of this, that she's put some specific rules in place to make sure that these women aren't exploited, that they aren't, you know, look, I agree. Obviously they should make minimum wage, but this is a job that should pay more than what the Raiders were doing, some of the other idiots out there. But I think, you know, it's still ultimately the choice of the worker and the employer to come to an agreement what the pay should be. I just think that Martha would not chance screwing this organization's reputation based on, you know, many, many years of ownership from the Ford family. I don't think they would hose the reputation just to have, you know, a little TNA on the sideline. So, you know, I'm just taking the pro side and arguing that side. So you can make your counterpoint if you'd like.
Yeah, Chris, the only arguments I had would essentially be rehashing the same, you know, points over again. And like we said, you know, these aren't necessarily like opinions that we hold in this particular situation. They're just parts of the argument that's been going on. And what is, you know, the things that will continue to be said, and people will probably have very heated arguments, and Chris and I will probably stay out of those arguments. So,
yeah, it's easy. It's, I don't know, for me, it's easier if I kind of pull myself out of it and you just tell me argue aside, right? Do it like a kind of a debate thing like you do in high school or debate team in college or whatever. But you can look at both sides, and I think it kind of, wherever you fall politically, I think you're going to fall on one side or the other of the argument. I think there's just a lot of that kind of wound up in it. And, I it's no big deal. And I think that I was completely honest when I said, I believe Martha will ensure that this is a quality situation for everybody involved. So
yes,
I don't think
I agree. I agree with
this
that
organization.
100%.
All right. Moving on to the next controversy with this organization, Taylor Decker. He's been, exclusively playing left tackle. Every report I have had has had him at left tackle. I haven't heard anything about Riley Reiff. And I guess, you know, 3 weeks ago, it would have been super controversial. Now it's just kind of where things are playing out. For a while, the offensive line said they're going to make a pact and not talk to anybody about anything. And then 24 hours later, they broke that pact, started talking to the press again. But Taylor Decker looks, I mean, I know it's OTAs and minicamp, but he looks like he's got his spot on the left side of the line, pushing our guy Riley over to the right side. What do you think, Case? I kind of like this.
It won't be all said and done until preseason games, because that's, you know, that's when we'll know for sure. Like, if he's getting beat up in preseason games, they're going to go back to Reef, I expect. But I do think I have to, you know, I have to absolutely concede at this point that it's their plan and it's their hope that he'll be the starting left tackle this year, which kind of blows my mind. But again, like, if they can pull it off, if they can make that work and they can make Reef into the right tackle, which that's all the other side of this coin is that he has been, you know, playing mostly at right tackle from what we've seen and heard in reports, which, I mean, and everybody, you know, everybody kind of hoped that down the line, that's where this would end up. If they're ahead of schedule, fuck yeah. I mean, I don't, like, now this is, again, you know, then it runs into the issue of how well is Riley transitioning and all that kind of stuff. But again, if they're ahead of schedule and Taylor Decker is a viable option to start at left tackle in his rookie year, shit, I guess I can't really complain about that. I'm sure he'll go through some rough spots. I'm sure that, like, there may even be times where people say, well, he's not better than Reef was there. But if he can still manage a similar, you know, if he can not get completely overrun as a rookie, at least, you know, that's a good sign for the future of the left tackle position. So
yeah, I agree 100%. If Taylor comes in and he's playing as well as Riley Reef after 3 years of Riley Reef playing in the pros, then I'm going to feel really good about that. You're right. Riley's got to be able to pick it up at right tackle. You know, it's a complete reversal of a lot of the footwork and a lot of the hands work you learn. But it's that by all everything we've seen, this switch has happened and it's going to happen. So I like Riley on the right side. I just the way he plays, the way, you know, his level of athleticism, I think he's going to do a lot better for us than anything we had last year. And Taylor Decker is that long-term solution at left tackle. I like it. Lakin Tomlinson was playing his position. We talked to Riz last episode, and he looks, you know, he was there at our left guard, so it looks like he's coming along the way they want to. You know, we'll see about Travis Swanson at center. We'll see how that plays out if somebody else takes it away from him. And, you know, we got Big Daddy Warford there in the right guard. I feel good about this line this year, and it's not a lot of change other than one guy and you flip the sides, right? I'm feeling good. It's still worried about the tight end position, the edge of the line there and what we're going to do.
Yeah.
But I like this move with Taylor Decker. I like how he's landing.
I'm not sure I'm as confident as you are, but I can see a reason to be optimistic, even if I'm not quite yet. Like I gotta see it before I'll believe it, but I can see how it could be an improvement.
You just need to drink more.
Someone else who's, you know, yeah, well, no, I don't. That would be a problem. Somebody who has been clearly getting better year after year here is Darius Slay. And it's time to start really be getting serious about a contract extension. And there's quite a bit of talk about him possibly getting it next month in July. And as I've said, I believe that is the right move to pay him this year as opposed to next year. Letting him hit free agency if he has a big year as a cornerback, which he definitely has the potential to do, would put him in a price market where we may lose him, because somebody who's looking for just a cornerback to make their team, or a team like the Jaguars were this year that just has endless amounts of money to pay, would likely snatch him up. There was an article, Slay wants to get paid big time. And it's kind of it was posted by Cloverleaf Kearns on the sub, and it's a little bit not Cloverleaf Kearns' fault, I'm sure, but it's a little bit editorialized, a little bit sensationalized. Slay talked about wanting to, like, he sees himself basically as the eighth best cornerback in the league. And he listed off seven guys that he thinks are better than him. And to me, that is like as good as he was, you know, through the majority after a rough start of 2015. I that's a relatively healthy thing. Like, if he was coming out and saying that he was the best cornerback in the league right now, then you've got a little bit of a okay. But no, he has a relatively accurate, if optimistic, viewpoint of where he fits and where he feels he should be paid. And I'm okay with the idea of paying him the seventh through 10th, you know, best cornerback in the league. Hopefully the team's able to get it worked out so that it's not, you know, completely outrageous. Like I say, I hope they pay him and get him extended in July. One of the other conversations that's come up, this is just kind of for fun, but the argument between Darius Slay and Desmond Trufant of the Falcons, and they both entered the league 3 years ago. They both have played 3 years. The difference is that Desmond Trufant came in and played excellent right out the gate and in his second and third year. Slay took time. However, Slay finished off 2015 way better. If you looked at them from week 8 on in 2015, Slay was head and shoulders the better cornerback. So the question is that a sustainable thing for Slay? Is that 100% sure? Are we positive that what we saw out of him in the second half of the season is where he's at? Or do you think Desmond Trufant, who's been more stable through 3 years, is the better cornerback? And I don't know exactly where I fall on this.
All right. I have two thoughts, 2 points that I want to make about this. Number one, I think Slay's trajectory is a pretty straight line. Nothing looks like an anomaly from what we've seen from him. He looks like the real deal. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's truly maturing and growing at the cornerback position and will continue to get better. Trufant, I think, maybe is being figured out or something else is happening that he's not able to produce maybe like he did. I have all the faith that Slay is going to be able to, number one. Number two, I'm going to take the position of Drew Rosenhaus. And I'm sure when he read that quote, he called Slay up and fucking read him the riot act. Because Drew Rosenhaus gets paid based on how much Darius Slay gets paid. And when Darius Slay pinpointed his value there, Drew's like, I could have pinpointed your value at third or fourth, guaranteed, right? But it talks a little to, you know, that's the agent kind of business side of it. It talks a little bit to the character of Slay. And if you don't follow him on Snapchat or Twitter, you have to. He's absolutely a riot to follow. He's interesting. He's funny. He's one of the coolest guys you're going to see, especially in kind of the celebrity realm. He's just right, you know, really down to earth and really, really cool. I think that's just his personality. He's taking a realistic view of himself. He's very self-aware. I'm impressed that he actually placed himself, you know, seven people in front of him. I can't think of another player off the top of my head that would do something like that, right? Here's a guy who's continuing to get better and better and better, and he's basically pegged his salary where he's supposed to be quiet. The agent's supposed to do that for him. That tells me, though, that Slay is interested. Absolutely interested in that long-term extension with the Detroit Lions. And it's kind of laid out there. Again, our last conversation with the Riz, he hinted a little bit at July timeframe to see some of this play out. I think, you know, that feels right based on the things we're seeing here, but I really like the way this is coming together. I like how we've managed the cap. We're going to have the money for him. And I really believe we're gonna have the money for Ziggy too. I think things are coming together finally for this team as far as managing contracts and salary caps, like they have never done it before. And that speaks, I think, a little bit to that character issue. We've talked about Caldwell and Mayhew and now, you know, Quinn. wanting a certain character of player. And I think that's starting to pay dividends on the financial side, as well as the, and I'm knocking on wood here, but the no spousal abuse DUI drug charges side as well. So I like what I'm seeing. I feel like we're going to get this thing done before training camp. And I think Slay's going to make a good wage. I think he'll probably have a lot of guaranteed money in there, but we can do that because the cap allows us to the way we're at right now. And we'll get him done, and we'll get him on a long-term deal for a great rate. And then we're going to get Ziggy next year or the year after. I think we're in really, really great shape. I'm happy with where we landed.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So from a really happy note and a nice place, we're going to go to the grotesque. And if any of you guys have seen it, there was a post about Calvin Johnson actually tweeted something based on Peanut Tillman's surgery on his fingers. And there's a picture included. It was an Instagram post. And it's literally Tillman's fingers opened up wide, spread out. You see, you know, tendons and bones and all that kind of stuff. And all the work they're doing and the nastiness inside his finger. And then Calvin's got a picture of his jacked up finger next to all the torn up ones. And I think it's kind of Calvin saying,
yeah,
you know, it's almost a way of saying, guys, I retired. I said I was messed up. See what they're doing to that guy's hand? See how mine looks? I'm going to have to do that too.
Yeah.
It's gross. It's not, you know, you don't want to be drinking a protein shake while you're watching those pictures. But I think it gives you a good sense of kind of some of the injuries, some of the pain that these guys go through with playing the game that maybe you don't notice. You know, they're not limping around. Who looks at their hands that often to see how jacked up these guys' fingers are?
Well, actually, I will say that, I mean, I have pointed out, I know other people have pointed out that his hands haven't looked that good. He's had fingers that looked like they were out of place. You know, there's the Brian Baldinger on the, I don't know if it's NFL Network or ESPN, who's got the finger, he's got a pinky finger that like sits at a 45 degree angle. It's not quite that bad, but like Calvin, I think it was 2 years ago that he broke his finger. And like, you could see it when he was playing that one of his fingers was not quite right. And it always made me wonder, you know, it made me wonder after that happened if that wasn't a contributing factor in some of the plays where things didn't go quite, you know, the way they were supposed to, like balls, you know, bouncing off his hands or whatever. So I don't know. Like, you know, I can't blame Calvin for retiring at all. He paid his dues. He took his licks. This was a good example of why, you know, why he walked away. So.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, I remember the broken, I know exactly what you're referring to, the broken finger when we saw it fucking sideways from, you know, his hand. And, you know, Bryce, one of our writers on the website has a story coming out. I don't want to give too much away, but talks about performance in the red zone. And when that article comes out and you guys check it out, I want you to remember this conversation from the podcast and Calvin's fingers. I think there's a lot of really good information here, and it's a good take on the situation both last year and for the coming year. Again, I don't want to give too much away. It'll be coming out this weekend. Check it out. Great story. Some good statistics to back it up. But yeah, it's a great point that those messed up fingers certainly probably had an impact on his ability to catch the ball.
Yeah. Also, if you haven't taken a peek at the picture, go take a look because you'll see exactly what we're talking about and how it is pretty gruesome and the toll that the NFL takes on its players.
Yep. All right, guys, that's it for this week in Reddit. I'm going to move on to a very special segment that we're very excited to share with you guys.
Let's keep the hype train rolling. Rolling, rolling, rolling. It's time to chat with a Detroit Lions player.
All right, today we're joined by one of our show's favorite Detroit Lions players and everyone's favorite med school student, Zach Zenner. Zach, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, not a problem. Thanks for having me.
So, Zach, I have a confession to make. I am a Fargo native and as such a bit of an NDSU fan, and I apologize and I hope you don't hold that against me. but as such, I was able to watch you play against NDSU on several occasions, and especially that senior year, you kind of abused them, especially that final game. I think that was like 133 yards and two touchdowns. picked you up for the Lions. I was so excited to have you on the team. I just wanted to kind of know, like, get a little history from you. What were your favorite moments of your time with SDSU with the Jackrabbits?
I think one moment that really stands out is my sophomore year. We went to the playoffs and we hosted Eastern Illinois and we won the first round. And then we ended up going up to NDSU in the second round and losing. They beat us pretty handily that time.
Well, it's something tough to
three
to play,
or something like that. Anyway, yeah, but that first round was really special just for the program on so many levels. And we got to play at home and it was cold and I loved it.
So we have a question from one of our Patreon donators, one of our listeners. And we let them kind of submit a couple questions here out of our subreddit. And it's kind of like a virtual AMA. But they want to talk about the move from college to the NFL and how the talent level is just so much higher in the NFL. And here you are as part of a committee of running backs with the Detroit Lions. And, you know, you guys, you have to be working together and learning from each other. Is there anything in particular you can think about that you've learned from Theo Riddick or Amir Abdullah? And is there anything that you've been able to kind of teach them in this kind of sharing of information?
Well, for sure, you know, I can easily speak to what I've picked up from those guys and even picked up from Joyc last year. He's no longer with the team, but, you know, you pick up a little bit from each guy. You know, Joyc was pretty vocal in helping us, the young guys. There were, you know, three rookie running backs last year. And he was pretty vocal in helping, but also just watching people and how they work and the things that they do. You can definitely pick up stuff, you know, what they do well, how can you try to imitate that? And really, you don't even need to sit down and have like a coaching session. You can just pick it up just by watching those guys work.
Sure, sure. Sticking with the kind of the running backs on the team kind of situation, you know, when we listen to media, we, you know, read reports, sometimes I think we kind of get like an oversimplified version of things. And what we've been hearing is that you're a power back and that's the role you fill on the team. And I'm just wondering if that's, you know, how you view yourself. Do you view yourself as a power back or do you view yourself in any specific kind of running back?
I mean, I think, you know, if I were to categorize myself, I'd say running back. But when you look at the things that I can bring to the table, I think you could put me in a power category. However, I'm working to do well at all things, you know, be a good pass protector, run routes well, you know, catch the ball, do it all. You know, I'm working to do it all. As far as last year, that was, you know, you could say my part of my role on the team, you know, aside from special teams, so you could say more of a power back. Like I said, I'm working to do well in all phases, not just that phase.
Sure, sure. Just to kind of like further that thought, kind of the thing we've heard is that you'll be in competition with Steven Ridley for role on the team. Is that accurate or not really?
You know, that's tough to say. You know, I've never sat in a general manager position or a coaching position. You know, certainly there's competition amongst running backs, but you know, there's scenarios where you're competing against other position groups. You know, for example, maybe they want to, you guys both do well, they're going to keep both running backs and another position group is going to lose the player.
Right.
That's a scenario that happens as well. So really, you're not just competing against the running backs, you're competing against all, how you'd say, like bubble, but borderline players. You're competing against all of them because certain positions, you know, you might force general manager to have more running backs,
sure,
and remove a roster spot from a different position group, or exactly the opposite. So really, you're competing against all of those people.
Sure. Another question from one of our listeners, from Matt. He wants to talk about the change from Joe Lombardi to Jim Bob Cooter, and I know there's some political implications here, so we don't want to get anybody in trouble. But you know, the kind of narrative. There's two narratives here about last year and the results that we saw from the team. One narrative is that, you know, the change to Jim Bob and the way that he tweaked the offense was what helped the team go that 6-2 at the end of the year. And I think everybody agrees the team was better than that, those first couple games that they played. The other narrative is, oh, we played easier teams. But I don't know that there's really, you know, easy teams in the NFL to play. Do you think that Jim Bob's playbook made that much of a difference to help kind of push the team over the top last year? Or was there kind of something else that happened that maybe people aren't talking about?
You know, it's hard to say exactly why a change occurred when you have so many moving parts as part of an organization. I think what I can speak to is the leadership of this team and how they were resilient and, you know, kept their eye on the prize and kept working, and the work just got better and better. Practices and focus got better and better throughout the season. And we really were able to finish out strong because of that. Now, you to say, is there, did the change help? You know, it's hard to say. You can't put it all on one thing and change the offense. You can't put it all on the resilience. So it's a combination of all those things.
Sure, sure. So as we come into this year, you know, Jim Bob's had a lot more time. I mean, the going into London last year and then into the bye week seemed to give him a little more time with the playbook. As you look at it, there's been a lot of talk that it's a complete revamp, even from where he tweaked it last year. Do you agree with that? And then if so, or even if not, what does the playbook this year mean for you as a player? How do you see yourself fitting in?
Well, I'm not going to get it very specific at
sure,
all,
sure.
But you know, there are, I think it is different, but the same. So it's a new language, but some of the concepts are similar. And for me, I just, wherever the coaches need me, that's where I see myself fitting in. You know, last year you talked, as you mentioned, it was maybe in the power role. This year, whatever they decide, I'll be ready and ready to give my best effort for this team.
Sure.
So, you've been getting a lot of work in the OTAs just because of some, you know, maybe unfortunate injuries or maybe some minor things that guys are just being careful with. Do you think those extra reps in the OTAs are really, you know, extra helpful for you, especially, you know, coming back from what happened?
Definitely. Reps in the NFL are invaluable, and to miss as much time as I did, it's extra helpful to get these reps. Coming back here in the spring, you know, so I can hit the ground running when training camp starts. So, yeah, but it doesn't matter what time of year, reps in the NFL are extremely valuable.
So let's talk a little bit about the injury last year. I mean, I look at that and, you know, the result, a couple fractured ribs, a collapsed lung, and it takes me an hour to catch my breath after seeing the replay. It was horrible to see. And you've been a favorite of the podcast literally since we picked you up. We've been really rooting for you and cheering for you. One of the things, and injuries are never good. I don't even want to imply that. But we thought about it, and you're kind of a punishing runner. A lot of times you'll take it to a defender, and those legs, it's great to watch them just keep moving. It feels like you're laying down and you're still trying to run. But we see this, and there are benefits to conditioning and nutrition at the NFL level. And, you know, the human body, it takes longer than at draft age to get to its full potential. Do you think maybe there's a little bit of a bright side here that we could look at and say, hey, I've had extra time with this NFL level conditioning and nutrition, as we said, and it's going to help me and help my body be bigger and stronger coming into this year and really make a splash at the running back position?
Well, I mean, you know, that aspect as well, being conditioning and nutrition, but just having just been a part of an NFL organization for a whole year is huge, and I feel so much farther ahead this year than I was last year. You know, last year everything was new, you're running around trying to figure things out. This year there's, you know, granted new offense, but way more familiarity with just how everything is going to work. And how, you know, what's expected of you at different times. So in that aspect, I feel way more comfortable this year. And yeah, and plan on making a bigger impact.
So it would kind of wrap up on something a little more lighthearted here. We as fans love nicknames, and we've come up with one for you, but we want to hear from you first. You know, if there's any that you kind of have garnered through college or in the pros that maybe we as fans don't know about.
Well, I've had many nicknames.
Okay.
For, you know, some of them stick more than others. Some of them are jokes. Some of them are more serious, but I've been called Zen, Double Z, Z Squared, ZZ Top. recently been called Doc. Daryl Tapp last year called me Z2K. let's see. That's what all I can think of right now. I'm sure there have been others.
Sure.
But that's what I can come up with.
Well, we've become rather partial to Zigzag. How do you think about that?
Zigzag?
Yeah.
Nice. I haven't heard that one yet, so that's it's original. That's for sure.
All right.
It came up in the preseason last year in our podcast. Again, we've been longtime fans and you know, just love watching you play. And we were talking about you last year in the preseason, and one of our guys came up with the whole concept of Zigzag Zenner, and it just stuck for us, and we've been kind of riding that for a long time.
Yeah, that's fun. That's a good one.
Last question. I know you've got to run. It's been a busy couple of weeks here, and I'm sure you want to get off to that vacation time. Recently just got married in March, I believe, and moved to Detroit. How do you like the city of Detroit? How's everybody been treating you since you've come here? The one thing I know, coming from South Dakota to Detroit, you don't have to readjust to wintertime.
it's warm here.
Yeah. So everything, has it been going well? And if you can just touch a little bit on the research aspect of your off season, I think people would be really interested to hear about that.
Yeah. I mean, as far as my transition to Detroit, it's been fairly easy. You know, the environment is very similar. You know, like I said, even a little bit warmer, which is nice. The people here, I have enjoyed everyone that I've come across and gotten to know, especially at the hospital, Henry Ford Hospital, where I've been doing my research, and the research division has been great in just taking me in and understanding my situation and, you know, understanding I've got other responsibilities. So what the research was, this is a mouthful, but it was, and I'll explain it. It was a fructose-induced salt-sensitive hypertension in rats. What that means is these rats get sugar, water, so which is through fructose, which is what you find in, you know, Coke, all Pepsi products, right? All
yeah.
Pop.
Yeah.
Anyway, they drink that, and then you switch them to a high salt diet, and the diet is, I don't know, it's similar to like 5 or 6 bags of potato chips a day. So most of us don't reach that, but there are, you know, there is a percentage of Americans that do. You see an increase in blood pressure by, it depends, but, you know, 10 to 20 blood pressure points after 1 week on that diet.
Wow.
So their blood pressure is going up a lot in a very short time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you continue that on, they get metabolic syndrome, you know, diabetic, all sorts of bad stuff starts to happen if you continue giving them high salt and fructose. My role was just to try to determine how that happens and why. So I gave them a free oxygen radical scavenger. And again, that was just to determine how that's happening and try to, you know, either eliminate or check some boxes off to see how and why.
Wow. You know, it's always impressive stuff. I love the stuff that the guys do in the labs. And, you know, you start looking at this stuff when you can kind of tweak and then watch what happens as a result. You can kind of identify what mechanisms cause these things. And out of that, you can start finding cures and ways to approach changing. Obviously you want to change diet, but ways of changing the body's reactions to a lot of these things.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a lot of work, but it was worth it.
Yeah, no, that's great. And you can tell, you know, very passionate. It's really neat to have those kind of, you know, passions, being football and then on the very academic side as well. All right. Zach, I know you have a limited amount of time and you want to get off to vacation. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you making the call and spending some time with us today.
All right. Thanks, guys. Glad we could work it out.
All right, guys. That does it for this week's show. Remember, we need your involvement. We use your comments in the subreddit, DetroitLions.reddit.com, and your feedback to make this show better. So please make sure you engage us there. Let us know what we do well. Let us know what you want us to improve on. And we'll keep working at it. Don't forget about us on Patreon. Get your opportunity to submit questions for the next interview with a Lions player and get your questions asked. Come to DetroitLionsPodcast.com, go to the right-hand side, click on the Patreon link, and give us $1 a month or $5 or $1,000, whatever you feel like. Put some money down, help support the show if you can. Gives you that little opportunity to get your thoughts in front of the players, and it helps us keep the show going. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at DET Lions Podcast. DET Lions Podcast is the best way that you can see Case partying naked. Don't forget also, you can contact us via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast. That's all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast. Or call us on the Lions line, 929-33-LIONS. It's 929-335-4667. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. It's maybe a little better after we had a drink or two. And you might get a chance to hear yourself on the show. Another way to help us out is by using the link to Amazon on our website, DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Go to the right-hand side of the page, scroll down to the Amazon link, click on that, and do all your shopping. It's the best way to help support the site by doing something you were going to do anyway. It doesn't cost you anything extra, and you sometimes can get some discounts. So go ahead and do that for us and help us out. Make sure to go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com, subscribe to the podcast, and get it to come in your little box automatically. As we say, who wouldn't want that? Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on the Detroit Lions Podcast. It's your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection.
Let's bring it in here together. Let's go. Woo! Let's
go, baby. Lions on three. 1, 2, 3.
Lions!
I gotta piss like a unicorn.